Hi everyone, my name is Shona Lane. I'm Education Officer here at the Western Plains Cultural Centre.
Joining me today are Andrew, our Manager.
Oh, good afternoon.
Kent, our Curator.
Afternoon.
Caroline, our Assistant Curator.
Hello.
And Jessica, our Collections Officer.
Hi.
Today we'll be focusing on the latest work in the new media space, which is Hayden Fowler's three-channel digital projection titled The Long Forgetting. In this work, there are three human figures who are performing simple rituals in circular caves. So can we start thinking about how this work came about first?
Well, the gallery has been interested in Hayden Fowler's work for a number of years. We have three works by him in our collection. And he has been exhibited here a number of times over the years. And we became quite keen on his work because of his consistent use of the animal in his work. Having a background in biology, and in particular animal behaviour, meant that his art encompasses a lot of ideas about animals, etc. And our relationship with him has been really good. So when we approached him about the possibility of showing new work in the space, he jumped at the chance, as we did. And although this work is not dealing necessarily directly with the animal, I think it sort of it reveals a sort of a shift in terms of his use of human beings as part of a much bigger system rather than just us being separate to animals.
And in thinking about that, he actually did some research on his own personal heritage and where he comes from. What was revealed through that?
He had his DNA tested and his DNA drawn back to prehistoric times. He was able to trace his ancestors to a particular part of Europe, which any of us can have done, apparently, quite simply. But for him, he was able to look at the cave sites where those ancestors may or may not have lived, and it proved to be very inspiring in terms of this particular project because it meant that he had a personal relationship to a lot of the ideas that are explored in this work, but also obviously they have tremendous connections to civilization as well as the art world.
Okay, so the work shows some of the rituals that have been performed throughout history by humans. Andrew, can you tell us a little bit about the ones that are explored?
Well, there are three main rituals. Two of them are ones that, you know, we are sort of quite familiar with. There's a birth ritual, in a sense, and there's also a death ritual. Now, the birth ritual that's being shown is a naked lady sitting in a cave by herself. Her head is covered with a mask that completely surrounds her head, and it sort of is inspired by rose petals. And she's basically removing rose petals from her genitals in this very sort of slow, meditative, and quite sort of somber way, as if the ritual of childbirth is not the sort of joyous, white, happy baby shower thing that we know it as now, but something that was, you know, for many thousands of years, and you only have to go back, you know, even decades, where childbirth was something quite harrowing for women, that there was a fair chance that they would die, and you know they had to be prepared for that. And then there's in the second one, the death ritual, is equally sort of slow and somber, I think, and it's one man who has already painted himself completely blue, and is wearing again an all over mask, but this time of sort of small blue, I suppose, pebbles or rocks sort of thing, is painting another individual blue. And the other individual is lying on a bed of straw and is quite clearly dead. He doesn't move during the entire process. And so there is there, you know, that ritual of preparing someone for the afterlife. And again, it's quite slow, it's quite meditative as he sort of scoops out this sort of blue clay-like mixture and smears it over his brother or the other individual that he's working on. And then when he's finished his task, he sort of lies down with him as if he is also waiting to die. And it is quite somber. And I think that one's quite an interesting one because, you know, when paleoanthropologists or ethnographers go back in time, one of the things they look for in terms of have we found a culture, have we found a civilization of some sort, is finding their death practices. These are the best preserved because they're underground or something or other. And it's also quite easy to see differences. You know, how do you prepare the body? What do you do with it? What do you leave with it? How do you wrap it up? Is it put into a special posture or something like that? And the third is a very abstract cave painting, which is really a series of sort of interconnected circles and lines that sort of spread from the centre of the cave off to the left-hand side. And this was inspired by sort of a map, sort of an idealized map of the spread of cultures across Europe, of how one culture led to another one, which may have led to one that died out or didn't progress, but the other one went on. So sort of like a family tree, but in a very idealized sense.
I think there's ritual happening in two ways within the work. Obviously, there's the first way that Andrew talks about this idea of the rituals within human civilization and humankind. But there's also another element in this idea of the kind of ritual functions that art originally had, that for the greatest percentage of our history as human people, you know, early Paleolithic, kind of Neolithic cultures, art, ritual, civilization, society, life was all the one thing. There wasn't this sort of separation between understanding the universe, making sense of it, art, trying to control the universe. Art was something that was used to make order and sense of the world and to try to control the sort of whims of the environment and different things like that. So there's a sense that art had a very strong function in helping people come to terms with the world that they lived in through using art, not just looking at it, but making it, wearing it, living with it. And I think that's something that Hayden's work picks up on, this idea that somewhat has gone out of modern sort of civilization, is this idea that art has a function more than just something that we look at or enjoy or that tells us a story, that it has a way of the physical making of it, and looking at it is a way of us coming to terms with the world, understanding the world, making our peace with the world. So it's a very core function of human civilization.
Dealing with our own mortality.
Exactly, yeah.
And maybe that's our long forgetting.
Possibly. I'm thinking about the title. Can you talk to us more about the significance of it?
Yeah, I think the work, the title, The Long Forgetting, I think refers to a kind of collective amnesia that Western civilization has in relation to its own past.
Mm.
I think we can all identify cultures that have very strong connections to their primitive time. But in a sense, we've kind of lost our connection with our own primitive past. Whether that's been an essential process that we've needed to go through to remain on top of the woodpile, for want of a better expression.
There is this idea that civilization is a progression upwards and to betterness, and that we're in a sense of improvement all the time.
Yeah.
Whereas we don't necessarily always remember those fundamental basic elements of being a human being, that sometimes things that we experience, you know, everyone experiences these sort of base experiences in their life, but we tend to kind of not think about them deeply and not think about their significance or the fact that it's probably one of the few things in the world that connects every single human being on the planet.
I think what's interesting about the subsequent controversy surrounding this work is that, in a way, it is a reminder of our mortality, a reminder of our place within the world. It's a reminder of the very basic functions of our bodies, reminder that we're all naked underneath our clothes, we're living a culture that is, you know, pretty busy, that's layers and layers of meaning and etc. But I think this work strips everything back to a kind of primitive,
simple
way, which I think is confronting and shocking for people.
But also at the other side of that, it's incredibly tender. It's incredibly, it moves you in a very simple way because we relate to it, not because we're Australian or, but because of we're human beings, that very fundamental element that we can relate to another person's experience.
I think in a lot of cases we do cringe at that concept of where we've come from because it is so basic and so instinctual and so primitive. So there's definitely that reaction of, I don't particularly want to look at this and acknowledge this about myself and where I've come from. Whereas in some cultures, like you stated, Kent, they celebrate that and they rejoice in that. But we're really a part of a culture that tends to want to put that aside and not reflect on it as much.
And we're also, we're still very much a culture that wants to idealise ourselves and stylise ourselves. You know, that's that we prefer to look at ourselves, you know, looking attractive.
Yeah.
And I think that this work strips all of that back, to use another expression. you know, to remove the artifice and to remove any kind of, you know, image that we may construct. This is about, not really about aesthetics in the sense that, you know, we are, that there's some kind of idealized figure, but conversely, you know, in the case of the Venus figure, the female figure, the notion that this, that her appearance was an idealized figure, you know, thousands of years ago and many times since, is also a reminder of our desire to construct notions of beauty.
Or push against what sometimes is the natural state of something.
That's exactly right.
Okay, well, thinking about the history that it draws upon, Jess, can you give us an idea of the direct references to art history that are evident in this
work? Oh, well, I mean, there are the most obvious one is the female figure is almost a life model of the Venus of Willendorf, the famous prehistoric sort of fertility sculpture of a female form, which is the face is covered with a mask, so the face is unimportant. It's a real celebration of her, the aspects of her that identify her as a woman, her very large breasts, very large bottom and stomach, obviously is a celebration of her fertility. And that was a consistent image of not just females, but it's the consistent image of humankind we have for tens of thousands of years. We don't have similar figures of men. We just have these repeated female Venus forms. And so that's obviously the most overt art historical reference. And I think the male figures is far more a kind of anthropological reference. There isn't a lot of depiction of men in art from that period. It's not until kind of you start to get civilizations in, you know, the Middle East and Greece that you start to get the male figure. So I think those two are distinctly kind of anthropological, you know, references to, as Andrew said, the kind of death rituals that were practiced universally.
Well, I think probably if we look at prehistoric times, the only real kind of reference to male would be a phallus.
Yeah, exactly.
That is disembodied from the figure, whereas the female depiction of females is through the body, as the body is the beginning of creation, etc. You know,
and they were very much, you know, the Venus figures were things that people carried with them all the time. They wore them around their necks, so they were art that was, like I said before, had a practical use that was intended to make the wearer more fertile or celebrate their fertility or things like this. So there is that sense of art, that kind of functional nature of art that was, you know, so intrinsic to why we started making art in the first place.
But I think also the second screen refers to many burial rituals that still exist in the world, Tibetan, Thai, Indian, etc., which in a sense is about a celebration of life, but also a preparation for the afterlife. The other interesting thing about the work is that it's not all about the history of art, but looking back to prehistoric times, there isn't a sense when you're viewing the work that the cave is all too clean. The boulders, etc., in the background are all too round and too smooth, and the colours are all very simple. And in a sense, I think, given Hayden Fowler's practice, where these environments that he creates are a kind of a nowhere, they're not really places that we can pin down in a particular time. And in a sense, they're asking the question, is this the future? And we could look at this work as being about birth and death, but also about, you know, are these the last remaining people in the world doing the last remaining rituals in the world? So I think there's a kind of an interesting melding of the past and the future in the work, and I think that makes the work as a result quite sort of unsettling in a way. It's not a warm work in some respects. It's quite cold in terms of the way that these rituals are being performed. Whilst they're meditative in their own way, you know, they could be depicting, you know, the future. This could be where we end up, back to our basic state.
I mean, it's a kind of a strange reference point to take to it, but I tend to look at these works, and sometimes looking at them, I think of Planet of the Apes. This kind of scientific, futuristic, sci-fi world, but that is stripped of its technology and its advancement, and it's kind of the future, but in a kind of regressed way. So they have this, also have this sense of it being set-like and a performance, so that it's the kind of unnaturalness of the setting is kind of juxtaposed with the kind of natural, innate, primitive rituals that are being performed that make it kind of heighten the uneasiness and the shock sometimes, I think, of the work.
And regardless of the time, we are still as we are. We are there in all our naked glory, unchanged to a point. I think the third screen, again, might make reference to that notion of the future, that wall painting is nothing like the wall paintings that we see from primitive art. It is a very much a stylized, quite scientific looking diagram. So again, that might be referring to another time and place. And I think in all of Fowler's works, well, in particular the works that we have in the collection, it's as if these videos are being beamed from elsewhere. It's like these occurrences are happening in some kind of laboratory somewhere else, and we are, in a sense, getting a surveillance feed from that place. So, you know, again, that sort of, there's a whole host of ideas that are thrown up by the work.
The work, during its time on display here so far, has caused considerable debate. How much do you think this has to do with the fact that it is a video work?
I think it's partly due to that. I think that certainly the moving image of naked figures is something that most people place within a particular context. I think it's an unusual work for a large part of the audience in the sense that it is video, which is not a traditional art form. It's three channels, which means that you are dealing with three screens as opposed to just one. So the work is the accumulation of the three screens running concurrently. And in the most part, I think people are confronted by the naked bodies, by the rituals that are being performed. I think that if they were photographs of the naked bodies, it would be probably less contentious. If they were paintings, less so. I think that given that we are able to view these figures that are moving, that are interacting with each other, is not something that you see every day, or the particular subject matter of this anyway. And I think that for a lot of people that is quite confronting.
In a couple of cases now, that when I've been in the exhibition space, I've had it mentioned that maybe there should be information to support each of the screens, providing explanations that they are birth, death rituals, with, you know, maybe some historical reference points as to where it's been seen in the past. Is that something that we should consider?
The floor sheet that we've provided outlines, I suppose, each of the screens and talks about the meaning that is inferred by the works. We tried to keep the text to a minimum within the space, essentially so that the work sort of stood on its own two feet. We've certainly tried to talk to as many people. Certainly the guides on the weekends have been very active in providing people with a guided tour of the exhibition, which from many people I've spoken to has made a huge difference in terms of their understanding of the work.
Can I just, from sort of the kind of other side of that, and I understand that this work is unique because of its confrontational elements, but from my point of view, every artwork that's ever shown is having a conversation with art history anyway, is pulling from the past, is pulling from different reference sources. And we don't necessarily always say, this work is about marriage, this work is about the First World War, da-da-da-da-da. So there is that sense that, you know, sometimes making it overt for people and labelling what this work is about is stopping them, is taking away the impetus on them to try and push beyond kind of simple readings of things and simple understandings of things. So I think it's part of our responsibility here to give people enough information that they can approach the work, but then still leave enough questions open that they can come at it with, from their own perspective, you know, kind of work at trying to find out what the work means for them. So I think that while this work is a difficult work at times to understand, if we were to be
too
prescriptive of it, then it would... Some of the interest and enjoyment and learning that you get from a place like this is taken away.
Well, I think also it feeds into people's ideas of what an artwork should and shouldn't do in some respects. In a work like this, we can try to be prescriptive, and there isn't necessarily right or wrong answers to any kind of artwork. And I think people look for a simple... explanation, and in the most part, in guiding this exhibition, all you can do is make reference to the references within the work, a kind of a context that you can create for the work. But at the end of the day, an artwork should essentially produce, you know, references and associations within the viewer's mind, which may or may not be in the artist's mind.
I should also point out the level of divisiveness of this particular work. I mean, we often, not through choice, but it just happens sometimes, we often put on works that a lot of people don't like, or they don't agree with, or they don't put a great deal of value to. But this is the first one that, in the time that I've been here, and I don't know that since the centre's opened, where we've actually had people saying that it should be taken off the walls, that it should be banned, and that it should not be allowed, which I find quite surprising in the modern age, when there is, you know, so much material out there on them interwebs and so on that people can look at, that something like this, which is certainly confronting, and it is, you know, nudity, but it's a far cry from the sort of things you can see on the internet, suddenly becomes this sort of touchstone for people to sort of cry out against modern society and depravity and the degradation of it. And at the same time, you know, we normally get, you know, we do get, you know, in from time to time sort of... people saying, you know, you're doing a good job, but it's usually in very generic terms, such as, you know, excellent venue, I really loved it, beautiful, inspiring. They very rarely, you know, write letters to us about a particular artwork, but we have also had letters sort of praising us for putting this on and standing firm with it, and by standing up with the artist and saying, no, this is an, we think this is an important work and something that we want to stick by. And I think it's been an interesting exercise for us on the power of art to still you know, get the old passions stirred up, whether we think for good or not. I was going to say evil there, but I thought better of it, and then I said it. But anyway, so you know, it has been quite an education for us, and you know, something that I look forward to repeating on the next exhibition.
And moving on now to what's happening at WPCC, Kent, can you tell us what's happening in curating?
On Saturday, we opened a new exhibition in the regional art space called Push, which profiles the work of Margaret McColl, Ken Tucker, Amanda Tout, Heather Rankin and Mark Maloof, five students who completed their diploma at WTAFE. The exhibition is the first time that we've shown a group exhibition in the regional art space, apart from a couple of exhibitions with two artists, and it's a really fantastic show profiling the work of five emerging artists from Dubbo.
Okay, we'll leave our podcast session there. Thank you everyone for joining us.
Thank you.